Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, this is George Gamont, and welcome to the show. Hopefully everybody's having a wonderful, beautiful, fabulous, marvelous Tuesday. Okay, so I put on enough little words behind the word Tuesday for a while, so we're having a good subject, and we're going to talk about is worry. And basically the question is, why worry? Why worry? And I have callers, and I'm going to get to you in a minute. We're going to talk about this, but I have my own personal reasons to think about. I'm a worrier. I've always been a worrier. And I'm really trying to break out of the worrying thing. And I'll talk a little bit more about breaking out of the habit or how to stop the habit from worrying from my perspective and what I've learned from my spiritual practice and helping other people, but also a lot of reading and listening to spirit on the subject. So we'll get into that. Now, I have a caller, and I will be with you in a minute. But I want to set up the show, and I read a couple verses. One's Bible verse, and the other one is from ancient, sacred Hindu texts about worrying. Well, it wasn't really about it's a paraphrase of Hebrew text by Deepak Chopra. But it's on the same subject. But I first want to go to the book of Matthew and Jesus' words. And I'm looking at the New Jerusalem Bible, which is, I guess it's a Catholic Bible. I don't know. I'm not a Catholic, but I kind of liked this Bible. So I'm using the text from the Bible, but it's all about worry. So maybe when I'm done, you'll have no reason to worry. I don't know. We always have reasons to worry, don't we? Okay, so, and the heading is Trust in Providence, and it's the book of Matthew, the 6th chapter, and I'm going to read a few verses, 25 through whatever I get to. And, okay, so, that is why I am telling you not to worry about your life, what you are to eat, nor about your body, or what are you to wear. Surely life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Look at the birds in the sky. They do not sow or reap or gather in barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they are? Ooh, really? Well, I don't know if we're worth more than them, but you know what I mean? If God's providing for the animals, as long as we're not kind of screwing up the environment, right? Okay, well, let me move on. Can any of you, however much you worry, add one more single cubit to the length of your life? And why worry about clothing? Think of the flowers growing in the fields. They never have to work or spin. Yes, I assume that not even Solomon in his all royal robes was clothed like one of these. Now, if that is how God clothes the wild flowers growing in the field, which are here today and are thrown away in the furnace tomorrow, will you not much more look after you who have so little faith? There's the key word, faith. Ooh, isn't that a big one? Faith. What destroys our faith? That God, the universe, spirit, source, internal self, higher self, is going to provide for us, right? Okay. I know I'm going to get to your calls, but I wanted to set this up, and this is kind of really important to me. Okay, so do not worry. Wait a minute. So do not worry. Do not say, what are we to eat? What are we to drink? What are we to wear? Is it the things your heavenly Father knows you need them all? Set your hearts on the kingdom first, and God's saving justice and all these other things will be given to you as well. So do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Well, Jesus is basically saying, live in the now. Give tomorrow over to God, the universe, your higher self, source energy. Turn tomorrow over. Live today. Focus on today. Let me give you one other quote, and then I'll take some calls. But it's on the same subject. Why do we worry? And I have some thoughts on why we worry, too. Okay, so we'll get to that in a moment. It's a quote from Deepak Chopra, and he's quoting from the Vedanta. There are only two symptoms of enlightenment. You know, everybody wants to be enlightened or be in that place of enlightenment, right? Yeah. So just two indicators that a transformation is taking place within you toward a higher consciousness. The first symptom is that you stop worrying. Let me read that again now. The first symptom is that you stop worrying. Things don't bother you anymore. You become lighthearted and full of joy. The second symptom is that you encounter more and more meaningful coincidences in your life, more and more synchronicities. And this accelerates to the point where you actually experience the marvelous. Now, if I was to interpret that a little bit and say, stop worrying about tomorrow, stop worrying about how these things are going to happen and when they're going to happen. And the second outcome of that is, and experience joy, experience happiness, you will encounter more and more meaningful coincidences in your life. Now, that's the law of attraction. Stop worrying about things. Turn them over to God. Experience joy, happiness, fun, all that stuff, and things will be brought to you. Stop worrying to get what you want. Worrying about what you want is not going to get you what you want. So let me take a couple calls, and if hopefully I've answered your questions already, how to get what you want. And I'll get more into why we worry in a moment. And I have my, from reading and studying and from Spirit talking to me about this, I kind of have an indication why we all do it. And it's sometimes really hard to do it, to stop worrying. Yeah.
Hello.
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 Let me put that one. Maybe this one will work.
Hello?
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 Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Okay, well, let that go. So I don't know who that was, and if you were trying, it was a 95 number, 4 number, and you need to log off because there's a lot of echoing going on. I don't know if that was intentional or not, or unintentional, whatever. So, yeah, I'm not going to go back to those numbers, obviously. So let me go to 757, and I'll take your call, and we'll talk a little bit more. And I got some other articles. I have lots of quotes and articles about this whole subject. I want to indicate to you why we worry. Well, Jesus would say it was a lack of faith, but how can we get to that place of lack of faith? You know, most of us say, well, no, I believe, I'm a believer, but we don't demonstrate being a believer, do we? So let me take another call.
Hi.
Hello? Hello?
Hi, George.
Hello? Yes, who am I speaking to?
This is Andrea.
Andrea, how are you today?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm actually having a very good day so far. I'm kind of into this subject matter a lot. I'm finding it very fascinating to do research. I do with research from the show, and I always get a quote or two, and then I kind of run into it and get all kinds of articles and information on it, or unrelated, but they're related at some level. So what's going on with you today?
You know, I'm on symptoms that you're on your enlightenment path. And I am experiencing the synchronicity in my life. And
okay,
I have
that's good.
So much of the worrying. I have a big test coming up in November, probably, or the end of this month. I haven't decided when I'm taking it. And I'm trying to have that faith and not worry about this test. But it keeps creeping in, even when I
Let me ask you a question. Okay, because this is going to go to my whole statement of why we worry. Okay? Have you ever failed in the past at something? You've just failed,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And as you were growing up, was there pressure on you to succeed?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So
what happens is when we're young, we get programmed. We get programs. Programs is you better not fail. And you put that thing upon mm-hmm. yourself. I better not fail. Pressure. We get pressure from our teachers, our parents, and this all happens before the age of 12, really. I mean, you could go back to your early childhood and go, you know, all this pressure.
I know.
So as you get older, you compound it because you fail at something, you know. And I have a great article mm-hmm. about people who failed, and then this is one of the mm-hmm. things I wanted to talk about was five people who failed
mm-hmm.
but became great. So
exactly.
So what if the other part of that is, so what if you miss the test? So what if you fail?
Yeah.
Can you do it again?
Yeah.
And if you fail, would you learn something from failure?
Yes. But I think the worrying comes from the fact that I already failed it once.
But you learned from that experience, right?
Yes, I did.
Well, go ahead.
I learned I shouldn't have taken the test because it was my nursing board and I was had just been diagnosed. But that wasn't the best time to take the test.
So this time you're planning at a better time for your life, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how much did you fail by?
I got near passing standards in all categories.
So you were close.
Very, yes.
Very close, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm, yes.
Have you forgotten a lot since then?
No, and I've been, you know, studying and reviewing. And
okay, so
what happened
you
was
feel...
I kind of put the book down about a month ago.
Yeah.
Because something just told me to do that.
Right, because you needed to absorb for a while. You needed to process for a while. It isn't just about, oh, I got to continue to study without processing, you know.
Right, right. So I got much better.
So I can't see why if you want to answer from spirit, you won't fail.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to believe that.
Yeah.
You know, a thousand psychics could tell you or whoever you're not going to fail, right?
Right, right.
But if you don't believe any of them and you think, yeah, they're crazy, you know, they don't know me and they're crazy and I'm going to fail.
I know I'm not going to fail. I know that.
Then don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
I know.
Just be prepared. You know, and you do the crush just before you take the test. You do the review.
Yes.
And since
yes.
you've taken the test before, you know the kind of questions they're going to ask. They may vary them a
yes.
little bit, but you know the process.
Yes.
So why would you
yes.
fail?
I know. I don't know why I'm taking that with me, but I am trying to get rid of it.
It's because of those old programs.
Okay.
See, and I'm really into this, and I'm really working with people on figuring out where these old programs came, because I used to do a lot of past life regressions, but also regression work and people, and taking them back to where did it all start? Where did I
mm-hmm.
get that program? And let's change mm-hmm. it. Let's put a new program on top of it. It's a better program. Or if it's just recognizing that there's no reason for that program to be in my life, I'll just release it.
Can you see where that started in my life?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let me see if I can. You can tell me I'm crazy on this one, but I feel it's around age 7 or 8. I don't know what grade that
yeah.
is or what grade in the school it is,
yeah.
but it feels like around seven
grade,
or eight.
Fourth grade. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You put a lot of pressure on yourself and you tried to achieve and you didn't do as well in certain things that you wanted to do. And it feels like you can tell me I'm wrong, but I get the words chastised. You were chastised for not completing something or not doing something.
Okay.
And they didn't say you were a failure, but you took it upon
okay.
yourself as I'm a failure. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't do it. I'm a failure. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Right? You know, like you didn't live up to a standard. So you set up yourself for pretty high standards too, right?
I think, yeah, I probably do that.
And then if you don't reach your standards, you're a failure.
No.
You're not. No, you're not. But I'm saying that's the mindset of, oh, if I don't reach this, if I don't do 99%, if I do anything less than 99%, I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm. That probably comes from my father.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew there was a program in there, somebody programmed.
Yeah.
So you have to deprogram yourself. You have to go back in. You
yeah.
can do it in meditation. You can think back to your childhood. You can go into, because you have to do it at the subconscious mind and versus the conscious mind, because the conscious mind is always going to go back to that old program that says, you might fail. There's a chance you might
yeah.
fail at this. But if you go into a subconscious place, and you don't have to use hypnosis, you can use very deep meditation, and just overwrite that. You create the mantra, but you put the mantra in at a subconscious level, not the conscious level. You know, a lot of people write these little things, and they put the little mantras on there. I'm a successful person, and they put it on their mirror, and they say it every morning, right? Which is good. But it's better to say it when you're in a deep meditative state, because now you're reaching your subconscious mind, and you're telling your subconscious mind, I'm a great person. I'm going to succeed at everything I do.
Right. How
did that? Because that's overriding that program that you established when you were young, and that you've been building on for years. Does that make sense?
Yes, for sure. But a lot of
bottom line is you're not going to fail. Bottom line is you're not going to fail, and there's no reason to worry. But till you can change that program, you probably will worry some, and that's human.
Yeah. Math was a problem for me. It's always been a problem for me. I always did a tutor. I always felt like, what the heck is wrong
math?
With me? Why can't I get this math? Why can't I get it?
Well, but, you know, a lot of some people just don't have a high aptitude for math, okay? You can have a great aptitude for literature. You can have a great aptitude for an analysis. You can have a great aptitude for retention of information. You can have healing qualities. You can do all these other things. But you may not be great at math. But you can't beat yourself up because you can't be everything, right?
Nope.
You can't be everything, right?
Yeah. I want to ask you about, I have a problem with my weight. Do you have a medical intuitive?
No, it has to do with past life. It has to do with the past life. It has to do with the past life. That's what I get right away on you.
Was I starving?
What's that?
Was I starving in another life?
Oh, a couple times. Three or four times, yeah.
Okay.
So you're storing food now. You're worried about losing food. What year were you born? What year were you born?
1964.
64. Now, this goes way back before. This goes back, it feels like the 17th century, okay? The 1700s. 1700s, not 17th century. That's 1800. Yeah. Whatever that century is. But it's the 1700s, and it's a village, and it's a small village, and it's a drought, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm really feeling Africa more than anywhere else. For some reason, I'm getting Africa, okay? Because there's dry spells and wet spells. And so, it wasn't that you starved to death per se, but you tried to travel to get food, and food was hard to get, and you died in the struggle to get food, okay? And whatever food you had, it was stolen from you.
Oh, my God. If my husband tries to take anything off of my...
Oh, yeah, you want to stab him, don't you? You want to get that knife in the hand kind of thing, right?
Oh, my God, this makes so much sense.
So what I would suggest you do in meditation, or have somebody, or I can help you, whoever, you know, I can't take the time right now, but I'll take you into meditation, or you can go to meditation and kind of visualize yourself going back to that and just releasing that energy and basically saying, I no longer need to carry that energy from that past life. I'm able to take care of myself, and I'm able to moderate my food now in a way that keeps me healthy and slim.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yes.
You're storing food because you're afraid somebody's going to steal it from you, or you're going to just not be able to get more food.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
You take care. Okay. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Yeah, it's funny about past lives because, you know, I've been a student of the law of attraction and the Abraham material, and the Abraham material doesn't get too much, they don't talk too much about past lives, and they kind of boohoo it a little bit. But I've read a lot on past lives, and I read a lot of other authors and past life regressionists and stories about past lives and how they really do affect this lifetime. Now, it's not always past lives because that programming thing can go back to childhood too. You know, and that's a program that she had that she brought forward about food, you know, the need to store food. And I had a friend who I did a regression for who had the same issue. about food. So, yeah, we can carry those things forward. And do we recognize, oh, yeah, there's no read for that was just something from the past. That's not me now. So let me try again on this call. Maybe you won't kind of go woo-woo again. And then we'll get into some of the articles and some things about not worrying. And I want to do this five thing, famous people, because I think I mentioned on that a little bit. I mentioned that a bit. Hello?
Hello, that sounds better. It must have been blog talk because it wasn't on my end.
Yeah, well, it came. Your number came up twice, so it was feeding back at each other.
Strange. Well, anyway, I finally got through, and my name is Mary. And,
hi, Mary.
That's a good topic tonight that you have about worrying, because I think we all have a lot of concerns right now about one thing or another, practical concerns. But
concerns and worry are two different things. You can have concerns about something, but you don't necessarily have to worry about it.
Yeah, I guess that's when it escalates. Right.
Yeah, worry becomes, in a lot of people, an obsession on the problem.
Yeah, sometimes it's a little hard not to, depending on, you know, how critical it is.
Well, Jesus says don't worry, so why are you worrying?
There you go.
If Jesus said the flowers of the field are taken care of and the birds, and then why do we worry?
I know, and I try to remember.
Yeah, but I know that's kind of
that song. The
idealistically,
his eye is on the sparrow.
Yeah. So what's going on, Mary?
I have two areas I'm waiting to see if I will get some financial assistance with, and I'm doing my part to try to make it happen. I'm wondering if you see that going through anytime soon.
Why not?
I don't know. Why not?
Why not? Why shouldn't it go through? But I mean, I'm giving you a positive message because I'm hearing for you that don't worry about it. It's done. It's a done deal.
Oh, all right.
It's a done deal. It's a done deal. The more you worry about it, the more you push it away.
It's true. And okay. And how do you get any time frame on this?
Before the end of October, you're going to be celebrating.
Celebrating? I didn't know it was going to be that exciting.
Well, a celebration could be a little minor celebration, like, oh, I'm going to buy myself something nice to eat because I'm really kind of happy about this. Or a celebration is you could take a trip to Europe. But I think a celebration, this is just something a little nice. Well, I'm so happy. I'm happier today than I was yesterday, right?
Well, I'll settle for that.
So,
I can accept that.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And one other thing, I have some animals that I'm taking care of. Some of them are rescue, and I've been trying to get some assistance with them in various ways. And I've done all the footwork and talking and, you know, spreading the word, and I'm wondering soon.
Mary, it will fall into place. It will fall into place. Your due diligence will fall. What you need will fall into place, okay?
Every day.
You have to keep your eye on the ball, and you have to keep pushing forward, but it's going to fall into place. You can't let up and say, well, okay, I can't do anything. I'm just going to stop doing anything about it. But yeah, it will fall into place. Your efforts will be rewarded, okay?
Oh, that's wonderful, because I feel like I've taken responsibility and I don't want to drop the ball. So I'm hoping
you won't. Why would you drop the ball?
I don't want to do that.
You know, I don't like the word try, because try means you could fail. So just say you're doing it. It's done. It's a done deal.
Okay.
It's done.
I like that. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a
great evening. Take care. You too.
You too.
Bye. That I know that sounds really optimistic, and, you know, when I say positive things about people, but, you know, she's been putting that out there. Mary's been putting out there. The other caller is putting it out there to the universe, to God, to have these things happen. And I'm doing is feeding back what I get, that, yeah, it's going to happen. Now, what keeps us from happening? What keeps from all those good things happening in our lives? What stops it? Well, we're going to back to worry again. So what's the answer for worry? What's this? And it's not a simple answer. It's to say stop worrying is like, wait a minute. I mean, there's so many different ways to approach the stop worrying. But first of all, it's getting back to the program somewhere that's been implanted in you that says, I have to worry about this. It's good. And I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, God, programs, what are you doing? And I give you an example of this. You're growing up and you're a small child and you're in a family and your mother's worrying about this and your father's worrying about money and it's always worrying about money and we don't have enough money to do this and we don't have enough money to do that. Oh, and we don't have enough. Oh, we don't have enough. We don't have enough. I don't know how we're going to get there. You want this? I don't know if we can do that. I can't think we can afford that. So doesn't that build worry in us? When our parents are telling us, I don't know if we can do that, and you build worry. You they're worrying about money. They're worrying about this. They're worrying about that. Where are we going to move to? Oh, I don't know what we're going to do. I'm out of a job. Oh, am I going to get a job again? So we experience worry as children from our parents, and we get it. And it becomes our program. They give us their program of worrying about stuff because we follow their example. We're these little sieves up to about age 12, 13, or whatever. We're these little sieves, and we have no filtering system that says, yeah, that's their problem, not mine. But it is my problem, right? But it's, you know, it's okay. We're not going to worry. But we're little sieves, and we just suck all this stuff in, and it becomes into our subconscious mind, and it builds. And it builds and it becomes a program. When I'm faced with a situation, I have to worry. When I'm faced with a situation about a new job, I have to worry. Because that's what my parents did. So I'm going to do the same thing. We've been programmed. Now, if you're a parent, how do you do that? Well, you kind of keep it away from your children. Even though you got problems, you don't want... I know some people will say, well, we're not being realistic and blah, blah, blah. But you could be optimistic. You know, I know there's an answer. I know there's a solution. I've turned it over. I'm giving it to God to bring me a solution. I'm turning it over to higher power, whatever phrase you would use to your children. I know there's a solution. Yes, we're out of it. And first of all, at a younger age, you want to keep it away from them at all. You know, you have to telling them you're worried about money or letting them overhear the conversations about money and all. It's horrible. But as they get older, and they get more curious, it's that, yeah, I know there's a solution. I've been praying for a solution. I know one's coming to us. So now you're programming there into the process of how to come up with a solution. Yeah, I'm turning it over. Let's go have some fun. I turned it over. I gave it to God. I know there's a solution to the problem. And I'm speaking as a parent to his child when they're old enough to understand those concepts of, I've turned it over to God. I gave it to God. Let's go have some fun. That's how you work with a child. You believe it? I don't know. Do you believe me? Versus, I don't know how we're ever going to eat. I don't know how we're going to get money. I don't know. We're running out of money again this month. Boy, you know, da-da-da-da-da. You know, I can't get a job. You guys are just going to have to sacrifice. Versus, I'm getting a job soon. Yeah, we might have to watch it for a little while, but we're going to be into the money really soon. We're going to be in a nice, stable place, financial place. May not be able to get everything, but we'll get things that are really important to us. Okay? See the difference in programming children? How do you want to program a child? Because if you get the program going, there's not enough, we're never going to get it, I don't know how it's coming, and then they start to worry. And then as we become adults, I can see this for myself going, uh-oh, yeah, I know that one, yeah. Okay, I've just had a little like a zap in my head about my mother. Ooh, yeah, that one. Okay, so as we get adults, we compound those issues, and we build on that program that says I should worry about this because my family worried about this. Worrying brings about the solution, and it doesn't. Pushes back the solution. Okay, so I spent like a good part of the show talking about worry and, you know, Jesus' words and Deepak Chopra's words and how to get to enlightenment, which is a pretty good statement. Defining enlightenment. How do you define enlightenment? I would define enlightenment. Now, you can disagree, and if you have your own opinions on that, I'd love to hear it. But from all my study and all my reading on this sort of thing, I define enlightenment as being in a state of knowing. Knowing that you're connected, knowing that you're one with the universe, knowing that you're one with your higher self, knowing that, in this case, you're okay. You're connected. You have this feeling of joy. You have this feeling of knowing. You have this feeling of happiness because you know who you really are. Enlightenment is knowing who you really are, is a spirit being in a body, and that your influences are not necessarily just from the human experience, but the environment of your spiritual self, your spirit self. God, the universe, source energy is flowing through you, and that because of that, you're on a path to freedom from worry. That makes sense? To me, that's enlightenment. You're not floating off into some other region of the universe or going into another dimension of some form. It's really enlightenment. It's happiness right here, living your happiness as a human on the planet right now. Because you're connected. You're absolutely connected to all that there is, and that all that you need and all you want, you're connected to it. That's enlightenment. So if you're reaching for enlightenment, reach for that connection. Reach for that connection of being totally connected to your higher self, the greater part of yourself, source energy, God. And as Deepak was quoted as saying, that's when you get into the synchronicities in your life. The miraculous starts happening in your life when you get to that state of connection. Okay, where are we there? Am I there? Sometimes, not always. I worry. I know, I'm like, oh. But, okay. But the fact that I'm talking about it is, for example, for me, of, okay, I don't want to worry. So let me go into a few articles. Unless you guys want to call in, you got any questions, things not to worry about, or things to worry about. Maybe there's some advice from Spirit for in your particular situation about worry. Okay? And why not too? So let me get into the five famous people who learn from failure. Because when you learn from failure, you stop worrying too because you know you can make it, right? You've done it. You can make it. You can make it. I failed, but it's not the end of the world. Okay, let me read the article. This is from beliefnet.com. Famous people who learn from failure. When you're in grade school, you're taught to become afraid of failure. Ooh, an F on the report card is a mark of shame. And we learn that failure should be avoided at all costs and that the notion can stick with us the rest of our lives. So that's a program. That's a program. If you fail at something, you're a horrible human being. It's going to stay with you. You have a big red F on your chest for failure. And now you're a failure forever, right? Because you've been shamed. Okay, well, let me go on. Ooh, shame. Ooh, that hurts, huh? Shamed. We learn that failure avoided at all costs. Yet in today's unsettled economic time, there's hardly a successful person, whether a businessman, scientist, artist, entrepreneur, or public figure, who hasn't lost a job, failed to land a coveted one, or experienced a broken dream. You're not alone. You're not alone, right? Worse, the fear of failure also holds us back from taking a chance or trying something new. No kidding. Mine's rejection, so I guess that's pretty close to that. A fear of rejection. Yeah, but I put myself, well, never mind. I won't get into that. But it's more important to try new things and not be afraid to fail. For most people, the climb up the ladder of success is riddled with stress, adversity, and self-doubt. But as following individuals illustrate, failures can teach us a valuable lesson to help us grow and eventually achieve success. What's more important is never to give up. Learn. Like the lady who called in, she took a test, she failed at the test, but she learned at it, she had a great experience, and now she's going to take it again, and she won't fail. Absolutely. Unless she programs herself to fail. But we won't go there. J.K. Rowling, Okay. Harry Potter author is one of the richest women in the world with a net worth of above $1 billion. $1 billion. That's not quite £1 billion. Maybe it's £1 billion. Maybe she, I don't know. Before publishing her first book, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, she experienced personal failure on an epic scale. I think the word epic scale, that means like huge, right? Not only had her marriage failed, but she was a single mother on welfare. When she finished her first Potter manuscript, it was sent out to 12 publishing houses, all of which rejected the book. A year later, Rowling found a publisher, but was advised to get a day job since she probably wouldn't make money in children's books. That's the worst advice you could give this woman, right? You know, like, well, you're not going to make it. It's like my, who told Lindsey Buckingham before he joined Fleetwood Mac, oh, it's a terrible decision. That's a loser band. You should never join it. So sometimes we get really bad advice, right? Okay, but that didn't stop her. She ultimately wrote 7 books in this series and gained a worldwide following. She says, failure taught me things about myself that I could have learned no other way. Ooh, isn't that a great thing? You got to push the envelope. Got to push the envelope. I discovered that I had a strong will and more discipline than I suspected. She failed. Look what happened. She kept going. She was a little red engine, or whatever they call that. Joe Torre. I remember Joe way back when. He was an announcer for the Angels, for a color commentator or whatever, for the Angels for a while. But Joe, who managed the New York Yankees to four World Series titles and 6 pennants, was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame last year. At the induction ceremony, Joe talked about how he had been fired as a major league manager 3 different times from the New York Mets, Atlanta Braves, and St. Louis Cardinals before he was given the opportunity to manage the Yankees. Now, he didn't give up after the last one. He said, ugh. After I was fired by the Braves, I was very depressed, he said. But he soon realized the only way you're going to learn is by experiencing setbacks. He told the audience that it's important to learn from failures. Then get yourself up, dust yourself off, and move on. After 12 seasons as a Yankee manager and 3 of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he is now the Major League Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations. And I believe he still has that job. He didn't quit. Oh, I think I'll go run a shoe store somewhere. No, no. He was passionate about what he did. He loved managing. He loved baseball. And he kept going. J.K. Rowling had to love writing to keep going. She had to know that there was something inside of her that kept pushing her to write. So I would say, what is your passion? And don't give up on it. Steven Spielberg, feeling miserable because you and your children didn't get into the college of choice. It happens to the best of us, including filmmaker Steven Spielberg. From the time he was a child, Spielberg was interested in movies, even making a 9-minute film at the age 12 to earn his Boy Scout photography badge. He wanted to attend the University of Southern California School of Cinematic Arts, but due to poor grades in high school, he was rejected by the school 3 times. Their loss, right? Their loss. I wonder if he ever gave to the school. I'd have to look at this. I think he gave to the school eventually. Yeah. Undetermined, he went to the Universal Studios and got some work around the set. At one point, he filmed a short film called Amblin, which was finally reviewed by Universal executives. They were so impressed, they offered him a contract. Since then, Spielberg has directed more than 50 films, won 3 Oscars, and Forbes put his net worth at $3 billion. His message, failure is inevitable, success is elusive, but you got to keep seeing it. Success keeps moving, you achieve one success. That's not him, that's me. Okay, well, you achieve one success, and then you move on to the next success. Now, you might fail along the way to the next success, but you know you can succeed, right? Don't worry about it. Just keep going. Don't worry about it. You will succeed. If you're passionate about something, if you're gifted at something. Milton S. Hershey. Almost every child in this country has eaten a Hershey's milk chocolate bar, a Hershey's Kiss, or a Reese's peanut butter cup. But did you know, or the little Reese's Pieces, right? Didn't E.T. eat Reese's Pieces? Okay, never mind. I'm off on a different. I'm mixing my people together here. But did you know that the entrepreneur who made it possible for us to enjoy these treats, Milton S. Hershey, overcame the failure of his first two candy businesses? Discouraged but not defeated. Now, that's important here. Discouraged but not defeated, he returned to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, hometown, but found himself shunned by most of his relatives who viewed him as an irresponsible drifter. Well, that's like, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, however, Hershey was undetermined. He started another candy business, the Lancaster Caramel Company, and made chewy caramels using milk, fresh milk. I'm sure he learned from his past experiences of making chocolate and making candies. Ooh, a little bit of lessons about, okay, how to do it. You ever cook something and the first time you go, oh, okay, I'm going to try that recipe. This is too much salt, too much sugar, too much this, too much that, too little of this, too little of that. And I'm going to start, and you could do it 10 times with a recipe and you finally get the one you want, right? That's failure, isn't it? Trying those recipes and going, ugh, ooh. Okay, let me do it differently next time. This time he succeeded, and soon he was shipping his crystal caramels throughout the United States and Europe. That gave him enough money to make semi-sweet and milk chocolate to launch his namesake company in 1894. He didn't give up. He didn't worry about failing. He kept going. I'm sure there was some worry there, but he did keep going. And I'm tying this into worrying. If you're constantly obsessed with worrying about whether you can do it and whether you're going to fail, you failed before you started, haven't you? You failed before you started. Bill Gates, before he launched Microsoft, Bill Gates not only dropped out of Harvard University, where he was a pre-law student, but he also co-founder of a business called Trafford Odata that failed. The company ran up losses between 1974 and 1980 before it was closed. Gates' business partner, Paul Allen, summed up the experience this way. Even though Trafford Odata wasn't a roaring success, it was seminal in preparing us to make Microsoft's first product a couple years later. See, he failed, but he learned from his experiences. He took the information, and that's what he did. As of March 2014, Gates' net worth is estimated at $76 billion. That's with a B, not a M. We knew that. You all know that. He's worth a whole bunch of money, right? But he didn't quit. He didn't give up. He didn't worry about, guy, I failed. Oh, I don't know if I could ever do this again. I'm going to worry. Okay. It's fine to celebrate success, but it's more important to heed the lessons of failure. That's his comment. It's fine to celebrate success, but it's more important to heed the lessons of failure. Isn't that a beautiful statement? Think about it. You know, and you got onto the next project. If you're worried about the next project, it never comes, right? You never get there. And I know you guys are probably going, what is he talking about today? And I was taking your questions about failure, our questions about worry, and what Spirit had to say to you about worry. Okay, so here's what I want to do. Here's what I want to talk to you about for a minute. I got a minute and a half. First of all, if you really like the show and you think I'm doing a great job and you like the information I'm giving you, you can go to my website, or you can go to the magazine which I'm publishing, which is themessenger.info, and you can donate to the show. A few dollars. I appreciate that. Or, as I was talking to this lady before, in the first part of the show, if I can help you to get back and find out where that program came about, keeping you from succeeding what you want, or where you implanted that worry bug in yourself, that worry program, so you can let it go and move into a success in your life, then I'd love to do that. And I use a form of hypnosis, but it's really more of a meditation, take you to a meditation, get you into your subconscious state where you can reprogram. And I've learned a long time ago that really is about doing it in the subconscious and not the conscious mind, and learning to reprogram yourself to be successful. I guess that's my little song and dance, right? That's my little thing. Reprogram your subconscious to be successful. That's not what I want to help you with. So contact me. I can do this. We can do this together. We can have fun. And we introduce a lot of love principles into that. Loving yourself, loving your community, loving your family. Okay, so it's been fun. I love you guys. Talk to you on Thursday. Bye.